Chapter 12. Unexpected Encounters. Egwene walked the cavernous halls of the White Tower, lost in thought. Her two red keepers trailed along behind. They seemed a little sullen these days. Elida ordered them to stay with Egwene more and more often. Though the individuals changed, there were almost always two with her. And yet it seemed that they could sense that Egwene considered them to be attendants rather than guards. It had been well over a month since Swan had conveyed her disturbing news in Telairun Riod, but still Egwene thought about it. The events were a reminder that the world was coming apart. This was a time when the White Tower should have been a source of stability. Instead, it divided against itself, while Randall Thor's men bonded sisters. How could Rand have allowed such a thing? There was obviously little left of the youth with whom she'd grown up. Of course, there was little of the youthful Egwene left, either. Gone were the days when the two of them had seemed destined to end up married, living on a little farm in the Two Rivers. That, oddly, led her to thinking of Gawain. How long had it been since she'd last seen him, stealing kisses in Cairhien? Where was he now? Was he safe? "Keep focused," she told herself. "Clean the patch of floor you're working on first before you move on to the rest of the house. Gawain could look after himself. He'd done a competent job of that in the past. Too competent, in some cases. Swan and the others would deal with the Ashaman matter. The other news was far more disturbing. One of the Forsaken? In the camp? A woman, yet channeling Sidene instead of Sidar? Egwene would have called it impossible once, yet she had seen ghosts in the halls of the White Tower, and the corridors seemed to rearrange on a daily basis. This was just another sign. She shivered. Halima had touched Egwene, supposedly massaging her headaches away. Those headaches disappeared as soon as Egwene had been captured. Why hadn't she considered that Halima might have been causing them? What else had the woman been plotting? What hidden knots would the Aes Sedai stumble over? What traps had she laid? One section of the floor at a time. Clean what you could reach, then move on. Swan and the others would have to deal with Halima's plots, too. Egwene's backside hurt, but the pain was growing increasingly irrelevant to her. Sometimes she laughed when beaten, sometimes not. The strap was unimportant. The greater pain, what had been done to Tarvalin, was far more demanding. She nodded to a group of white-clothed novices as they passed her in the hallway, and they bobbed down in curtsies. Egwene frowned, but didn't chastise them. She just hoped that they wouldn't draw penances from the trailing reds for showing deference to Egwene. Her goal was the quarters of the Brown Aja, the section that was now down in the wing. Medani had taken her time volunteering to train Egwene today. The command had finally come today, weeks after the first dinner with Elida. Oddly, however, Benai Nalsad had also offered to give her instruction this day. Egwene hadn't spoken to the Shinaran Brown since that first conversation some weeks before. She'd never repeated lessons with the same woman twice, and yet the name had been given to her in the morning as the first of the day's visits. When she reached the east wing, which now held the brown sector of the tower, her red minders reluctantly took up positions in the hallway outside, waiting for her return. Elida probably would have liked them to stay with Egwene, but after the reds themselves had been so exacting in protecting their boundary, there was little chance of another Aja, even the mild Browns, letting a pair of Red Sisters infiltrate their quarters. Egwene hurried her pace as she entered the section with brown-tiled floors, passing bustling women in nondescript, muted dresses. It was going to be a full day, with her appointments with sisters, her scheduled beatings, and her regular novice load of scrubbing floors or other chores. She arrived at Benai's door, but hesitated there. Most sisters agreed to train Egwene only when forced into the duty, and the experience was often unpleasant. Some of Egwene's teachers disliked her because of her affiliation with the rebels. Others were annoyed by how easily she could craft weaves, and still others were infuriated to find that she would not show them respect, like a novice. These lessons, however, had been among Egwene's best chances to sow seeds against Elida. She'd planted one of those during her first visit with Benai. Had it begun to sprout? Egwene knocked, and then entered at the call to come in. The sitting room inside was cluttered with the refuse of scholarship. Stacks and stacks of books, like miniature city towers, leaned against one another. Skeletons of various creatures were mounted in various states of construction. The woman owned enough bones to populate a menagerie. Egwene shivered when she noticed a full human skeleton in the corner, held upright and bound together with threads, some detailed notations written directly on the bones in black ink. There was barely room to walk, and only one clear place to sit. Benai's own stuffed chair, the armrests worn with a twin set of depressions, doubtless where the Brown's arms had rested during countless late-night reading sessions. The ceiling felt lower for the several mummified fowl and astronomical contraptions which hung above. Egwene had to duck her head beneath a model of the sun in order to reach the place where Benai stood rifling through a stack of leather-bound volumes. "Ah," she said as she noticed Egwene. "Good." Slender in a bony sort of way, she had dark hair that was streaked with gray from age. The hair was in a bun, and she, like many Browns, wore a simple dress that hadn't been fashionable for a century or two. Benai moved over to her stuffed sitting chair, ignoring the siffer chairs by the hearth. Both of those had accumulated stacks of papers since Egwene's previous visit. Egwene cleared off a stool, placing the dusty skeleton of a rat on the floor between two stacks of books about the reign of Arthur Hawkwing. "Well, I suppose we should get on with your instruction then," Benai said, settling back in her chair. Egwene kept her face calm. Had Benai requested an opportunity to train Egwene again? Or had she been forced into it? Egwene could see an unsophisticated Brown sister getting repeatedly roped into a duty that nobody else wanted. At Benai's request, Egwene performed a number of weaves, work far beyond the skill of most novices, but easy for Egwene, even with her power dampened by Forkroot. She tried to tease out the Browns' feelings on the relocation of her quarters, but Benai, like most of the Browns Egwene had spoken to, preferred to avoid that topic. Egwene did some more weaves. After a time, she wondered just what the point of the meeting was. Hadn't Benai asked her to demonstrate most of these very same weaves during her previous visit? "Very well," Benai said, getting herself a cup of tea from a pot warming on a small coal brazier. She didn't offer any tea to Egwene. "You are skilled enough at that. But I wonder, do you have the sharpness of mind, the ability to deal with difficult situations that an Aes Sedai is required to have?" Egwene said nothing, though she did pointedly pour herself some tea. Benai did not object. "Let's see," Benai mused. "Suppose that you were in a situation where you were in conflict with some members of your own Aja. You have happened upon information you weren't supposed to know, and your Aja's leaders are quite upset with you. Suddenly you find yourself being sentenced to some most unpleasant duties, as if they are trying to sweep you under the rug and forget about you. Tell me, in this situation, how would you react?" Egwene almost choked on her tea. The Brown wasn't very subtle. She'd begun asking about the 13th depository, had she? And that had landed her in trouble? Few were supposed to know about the secret histories that Egwene had mentioned so casually during her previous visit here. "Well," Egwene said, sipping her tea, "let me approach it with a clear mind. Best to view it from the perspective of the Aja's leaders, I should think." Benai frowned faintly. "I suppose. Now, in the situation you describe, can we assume that these secrets have been entrusted to the Aja for safekeeping? Ah, good. Well, from their perspective, important and careful plans have been upset. Think of how it must look. Someone has learned secrets they should not. That whispers of a disturbing leak somewhere among your most trusted members. Benai paled. I suppose I could see that. Then the best way to handle the situation would be twofold, Egwene said, taking another sip of tea. It tasted terrible. First, the leaders of the Aja would have to be reassured. They need to know that it wasn't their fault that the information leaked. If I were the hypothetical sister in trouble, and if I'd done nothing wrong, I'd go to them and explain. That way they could stop searching for the one who let information slip. But, Benai said, that probably won't help the sister, the hypothetical one in trouble, get out of her punishments. It couldn't hurt, Egwene said. Likely she's being punished to keep her out of the way while the Aja leaders search for a traitor. When they know there isn't one, they'll be more likely to look at the fallen sister's situation with empathy, particularly after she's offered them a solution. Solution? Benai asked. Her teacup sat in her fingers as if forgotten. And which solution would you offer? The best one. Competence. Obviously, some people among the Aja know these secrets. Well, if this sister were to prove her trustworthiness and her capability, perhaps the leaders of her Aja would realize the best place for her is as one of the caretakers of the secrets. An easy solution, if you consider it. Benai sat thoughtfully, a small mummified finch spinning slowly on its cord directly above her. Yes, but will it work? It is certainly better than serving in some forgotten storeroom cataloging scrolls, Egwene said. Unjust punishment sometimes cannot be avoided, but it is best never to let others forget that it is unjust. If she simply accepts the way people treat her, then it won't be long before they assume she deserves the position they've placed her in. And thank you, Sylviana, for that little bit of advice. Yes, Benai said, nodding. Yes, I do suppose that you are correct. I'm always willing to help, Benai, Egwene said in a softer voice, turning back to her tea. In, of course, hypothetical situations. For a moment, Egwene worried that she'd gone too far in calling the brown by her name. However, Benai met her eyes, then actually went so far as to bow her head just slightly in thanks. If the hours spent with Benai had been isolated, Egwene would still have found it remarkable. However, she was shocked to discover, upon leaving Benai's lair of a room, a novice waiting with a message instructing her to attend Nagora, a white sister. Egwene still had time before her meeting with Meidani, so she went. She couldn't ignore a summons from a sister, though she would undoubtedly have to do extra chores later to make up for skipping the floor scrubbing. At the meeting with Nagora, Egwene found herself being trained in logic, and the logical puzzles presented sounded very similar to a request for help in dealing with a warder who was growing frustrated with his increasing age and inability to fight. Egwene gave what help she could, which Nagora declared to be logic without flaw, before releasing her. After that, there was another message, this one from Suana, one of the sitters of the Yellow Aja. A sitter? It was the first time Egwene had been ordered to attend one of them. Egwene hurried to the appointment and was admitted by a maidservant. Suana's quarters looked more like a garden than proper rooms. As a sitter, Suana could demand quarters with windows, and she made full use of her inset balcony as an herb garden. But beyond that, she had mirrors positioned to reflect light into the room, which was overgrown with small potted trees, shrubs growing in large basins of earth, and even a small garden for carrots and radishes. Egwene noticed with displeasure a small pile of rotted tubers in one container, likely just harvested but somehow already spoiled. The room smelled strongly of basil, thyme, and a dozen other herbs. Despite the problems in the tower, despite the rotted plants, she was buoyed by the scent of life in the room, the freshly turned earth and growing plants. And Nynaeve complained that the sisters in the White Tower ignored the usefulness of herbs. If only she could spend some time with plump, round-faced Suana. Egwene found the woman remarkably pleasant. Suana ran her through a series of weaves, many of them related to healing, where Egwene had never particularly shone. Still, her skill must have impressed the sitter, for midway through the lesson, Egwene seated on a cushioned stool between two potted trees, Suana sitting more properly in a stiff, leather-covered chair, the tone of the conversation changed.
"We should very much like to have you in the yellow, I think," the woman said.
Egwene started. "I've never shown particular skill for healing."
"Being of the yellow isn't about skill, child," Suana said. "It's about passion. If you love to make things well, to fix that which is broken, there would be a purpose for you here."
"My thanks," Egwene said. "But the Amyrlin has no Aja."
"Yes, but she's raised from one. Consider it, Egwene. I think you would find a good home here."
It was a shocking conversation. Suana obviously didn't consider Egwene the Amyrlin, but the mere fact that she was recruiting Egwene to her Aja said something. It meant she accepted Egwene's legitimacy, at least to some degree, as a sister.
"Suana,"
Egwene said, testing how far she could push that sense of legitimacy. "Have the sitters spoken of what to do about the tensions between the Ajas?"
"I don't see what can be done," Suana replied, glancing toward her overgrown balcony. "If the other Ajas have decided to see the yellow as their enemy, then I cannot compel them to be less foolish."
"They likely say the same about you," Egwene thought, but said, "Someone must make the first steps. The shell of distrust is growing so thick that soon it will be hard to crack. Perhaps if some of the sitters of different Ajas began taking meals together, or were seen traveling the hallways in one another's company, it would prove instructive for the rest of the tower."
"Perhaps," Suana said.
"They aren't your enemies, Suana," Egwene said, letting her voice grow more firm. The woman frowned at Egwene, as if realizing suddenly who she was taking advice from.
"Well, then, I think it's best that you ran along. I'm certain there is a great deal for you to do today."
Egwene let herself out, carefully avoiding drooping branches and clusters of pots. Once she left the yellow sector of the tower and collected her red Aja attendants, she realized something. She'd gone through all three meetings without being assigned a single punishment. She wasn't certain what to think of that. She'd even called two of them by name directly to their faces. They were coming to accept her. Unfortunately, that was only a small part of the battle. The larger part was making certain the White Tower survived the strains Elida was placing upon it. Medani's quarters were surprisingly comfortable and homey. Egwene had always viewed the Greys as similar to the Whites, lacking passion, perfect diplomats who didn't have time for personal emotions or frivolities. These rooms, however, hinted at a woman who loved to travel. Maps hung within delicate frames, centered on the walls like prized pieces of art. A pair of Aiel spears hung on either side of one map. Another was a map of the Seafolk Islands. While many might have opted for the porcelain keepsakes that were so commonly associated with the Seafolk, Medani had a small collection of earrings and painted shells, carefully framed and displayed, along with a small plaque beneath, listing dates of collection. The sitting room was like a museum dedicated to one person's journeys. An Altaran marriage knife, set with four twinkling rubies, hung beside a small Kyrianan banner and a Shinar sword. Each had a small plaque explaining its significance. The marriage knife, for instance, had been presented to Medani for her help in settling a dispute between two houses over the death of a particularly important landowner. His wife had given her the knife as a token of thanks.
Who would have thought that the cowering woman of the dinner a few weeks back would have such a proud collection? The rug itself was labelled, the gift of a trader who had purchased it on the closed docks of Shara, then bestowed it on Medani in thanks for healing his daughter. It was of strange design, woven from what seemed to be tiny dyed reeds, with tufts of an exotic grey fur trimming the edges. The pattern depicted exotic creatures with long necks. Medani herself sat on a curious chair made from woven wicker boughs, crafted to look like a growing thicket of branches that just happened to take the shape of a chair. It would have been horribly out of place in any other room in the tower, but it fit within these quarters, where each item was different, none of them related, yet somehow all connected with the common theme of gifts received during travels. The Grey's appearance was surprisingly different from what it had been during the dinner with Elida. Instead of the low-cut, colorful dress, she wore a high-necked gown of plain white, long and tapering, cut as if to de-emphasize her bosom. Her deep golden hair was up in a bun, and she didn't wear a single glimmer of jewelry. Was the contrast intentional? "You took your time summoning me," Egwene said. "I didn't want to appear suspicious before the Amarlin," Medani said, as Egwene crossed the exotic Shara rug. "Besides, I'm still not certain how I regard you."
"I don't care how you regard me," Egwene said evenly, seating herself on an oversized oak chair, bearing a plaque that identified it as a gift from a moneylender in Tyr. "An Amarlin needs not the regard of those who follow her so long as she is obeyed."
"You've been captured and overthrown."
Egwene raised an eyebrow, meeting Medani's gaze.
"Captured? True. The hall among the rebels will have chosen a new Amarlin by now.
I happen to know that they have not."
Medani hesitated. Revealing the existence of contact with the rebel Aes Sedai was a gamble, but if she couldn't secure the loyalty of Medani and the spies, then she was on shaky ground indeed. Egwene had assumed that it would be easy to gain the woman's support, considering how frightened Medani had been at supper. But it seemed that the woman was not as easily cowed as it had appeared.
"Well," Medani said, "even if that is true, you must know that they picked you to be a figurehead, a puppet to be manipulated."
Egwene held the woman's gaze.
"You have no real authority," Medani said, voice wavering slightly.
Egwene did not look away. Medani studied her, brow wrinkling slowly, step by step, furrows appearing across her smooth, ageless Aes Sedai face. She searched Egwene's eyes, like a mason searching a piece of stone for flaws before setting it in place. What she found seemed to confuse her further.
"Now," Egwene said, as if she had not just been questioned, "you will tell me precisely why you have not fled the tower. While I do believe that your spying on Elida is valuable, you must know how much danger you are in, now that Elida is aware of your true allegiance. Why not leave?"
"I cannot say," Medani said, glancing away.
"I'm commanding you as your Amarlin."
"I still cannot say." Medani looked down at the floor, as if ashamed.
"Curious," Egwene thought, hiding her frustration.
"It is obvious that you do not understand the gravity of our situation. Either you accept my authority or you accept that of Elida. There is no middle ground, Medani. And I promise you this. If Elida retains the Amarlin seat, you will find her treatment of those she sees as traitors to be quite unpleasant."
Medani continued to look down. Despite her initial resistance, it seemed that she had little strength of will remaining.
"I see." Egwene rose to her feet. "You've betrayed us, haven't you? Did you go to Elida's side before you were exposed or after Bayonin's confession?"
Medani looked up immediately.
"What? No, I never betrayed our cause."
She seemed sickened, face pale, mouth a thin line.
"How could you think that I'd support that horrid woman?" I hate what she has done to the tower."
Well, that was straightforward enough. Little room to wiggle around the three oaths in those statements. Either Medani was true, or she was black. Though Egwene had difficulty believing that a black sister would endanger herself by telling a lie that could be exposed with such relative ease.
"Why not run, then?" Egwene asked. "Why stay?"
Medani shook her head.
"I cannot say."
Egwene took a deep breath. Something about the entire conversation irritated her. "Will you at least tell me why you take dinner with Elida so often? Surely it's not because you enjoy such treatment." Medani blushed.
"Elida and I were pillow friends during our days as novices. The others decided that if I were to renew the relationship, perhaps it would lead to my gaining valuable information."
Egwene folded her arms beneath her breasts.
"It seems reckless to assume she would trust you. However, Elida's thirst for power is guiding her to make reckless moves of her own, so perhaps the plan was not completely ill-advised. Regardless, she'll never draw you into her confidence now that she knows of your true allegiances."
"I know, but it was decided that I shouldn't let on that I'm aware of her knowledge. If I were to back away now, it would let on that we've been warned, and that is one of the precious few edges we now hold."
Precious few enough that she should have just run from the tower. There was nothing to be gained by staying. Why, then? Something was holding the woman back, it seemed. Something strong. A promise.
"Medani," Egwene said, "I need to know what it is that you aren't telling me."
She shook her head. She almost looked afraid. Light, Egwene thought. I won't do to her what Elida does those evenings at supper. Egwene sat back down.
"Straighten your back, Medani. You're not some simpering novice. Your eyes Sedai. Start acting like one."
The woman looked up, eyes flashing at the taunt. Egwene nodded approvingly.
"We will mend the damage that Elida has done, and I will sit in my rightful place as Amarlin, but we have work to do."
"I can't—"
"Yes," Egwene said. "You can't tell me what is wrong. I suspect that the three oaths are involved, though light knows how. We can work around the problem. You can't tell me why you've remained in the tower, but can you show me?"
Medani cocked her head.
"I'm not sure. I could take you to—"
She cut off abruptly.
"Yes, one of the oaths was forcibly preventing her from continuing."
"I might be able to show you," Medani finished lamely. "I'm not certain."
"Then let's find out. How dangerous will it be if those red handlers of mine follow us?"
Medani paled.
"Dangerous."
"Then we'll have to leave them behind," Egwene said, absently tapping the armrest of her oversized oak chair with one nail as she thought. "We could leave the gray section of the tower by another way, but if we are seen, it could raise difficult questions.
There have been a lot of reds lurking near the entrances and exits of our quarters," Medani said. "I suspect all of the Ajahs are watching one another like that. It will be very difficult to get away without being noticed. They wouldn't follow me alone, but if they see you—"
"Spies? Watching the other Ajah quarters?
Light, had it gotten so bad?
That was like scouts being sent to watch enemy camps."
She couldn't risk being seen leaving with Medani, but to go alone would draw attention too. The Reds knew Egwene was supposed to be guarded. That left a problem, one Egwene could think of only one way to solve. She eyed Medani.
How far to trust her?
"You promise that you do not support Elida, and that you accept my leadership?"
The woman hesitated, then nodded.
"I do."
"If I show you something, do you vow not to reveal it to anyone else without my permission first?"
She frowned.
"Yes."
Egwene made her decision. Taking a deep breath, she embraced the source.
"Watch closely," she said, weaving threads of spirit. Dampened by fork root, she wasn't strong enough to open a gateway, but she could still show Medani the weaves.
"What is that?" Medani asked.
It's called a gateway, Egwene said. Used for traveling.
Traveling is impossible, Medani said immediately. The ability has been lost for... She trailed off, eyes opening more widely.
Egwene let the weave dissipate. Immediately, Medani embraced the source, looking determined.
Think of the place you want to go, Egwene said. You have to know the place you're leaving behind very well to make this work. I assume that you are familiar enough with your own quarters. Pick a destination where nobody is likely to be. Gateways can be dangerous if they open in the wrong location.
Medani nodded, golden bun bobbing as she concentrated. She did an admirable job of imitating Egwene's weave, and a gateway opened directly between the two of them, white line splitting the air and bending upon itself. The hole was on Medani's side. Egwene saw only a shimmering patch, like a draft of heat, warping the air. She rounded the gateway, looking through the hole at a darkened stone hallway beyond. The tiles on the floor were of a subdued white and brown, and there were no windows within sight. In the depths of the tower, Egwene guessed.
Quickly, Egwene said. If I don't return from your quarters after about an hour, my red minders might begin to wonder what is taking so long. It's already suspicious to have you, of all people, send for me. We can only hope that Elida isn't careful enough to wonder at the coincidence.
Yes, Mother, Medani said, rushing over and taking a bronze lamp from her table, the flame flickering at the spout. Then she hesitated.
What? Egwene asked.
I'm just surprised.
Egwene almost asked what was so surprising, but then she saw it in Medani's eyes. Medani was surprised at how quickly she'd found herself obeying. She was surprised by how natural it was to think of Egwene as Amarlin. This woman hadn't been won over completely, not yet, but she was close.
Quickly, Egwene said.
Medani nodded, stepping through the gateway, and Egwene followed. Though the floor beyond was free of dust, the corridor was thick with the musty scent of uncirculated air. The walls were bare of the ornamentations one saw occasionally in the upper corridors, and the only sound was that of a few distant rats scratching.
Rats. In the White Tower. Once that would have been impossible. The failure of the wards was just one more impossibility atop an ever-growing stack.
This was not an area often given attention by the tower servants. That was probably why Medani had chosen it to open the gateway. That was well and good, but she was probably erring on the side of safety. This deep within the tower, it would take precious minutes to return to the main hallways and find whatever it was Medani wished to show her, and that would present its own problems. What would happen if other sisters took note of Egwene moving through the corridors without her normal complement of Red Aja guards? Before Egwene could voice this concern, Medani began to walk away. Not up the hallway toward the stairwells, but down it, moving deeper. Egwene frowned, but followed.
I'm not certain if I'll be allowed to show you, Medani said softly, her skirts swishing, the sound not unlike that of the faint scrambling of the distant rats. I must warn you, however, that you may be surprised at what you are stepping into. It could be dangerous.
Did Medani mean physical danger or political danger? It seemed that Egwene was in about as much of the latter as was possible. Still, she nodded and accepted the warning with solemnity.
I understand. But if something dangerous is happening in the tower, I must know of it. It is not only my right, but my duty.
Medani said no more. She led Egwene through the twisting passage, muttering that she'd have liked to have been able to bring her warder. He was apparently out in the city on some errand. The hall spiraled not unlike the undulating coils of the great serpent itself. Just when Egwene was growing impatient, Medani stopped beside a closed door. It looked no different from the dozens of other near-forgotten storage rooms that budded off the main corridor. Medani raised a hesitant hand, then knocked sharply. The door opened immediately, revealing a keen-eyed warder with ruddy hair and a square jaw. He eyed Medani, then turned to Egwene, his expression growing darker. His arm flinched, as if he'd just barely stopped himself from reaching for the sword at his side.
"That will be Medani," a woman's voice said from inside the room. "Come to report on her meeting with the girl. Adzalan?"
The warder stepped aside, revealing a small chamber set with boxes for chairs. It held four women, all Aes Sedai, and shockingly each was of a different Aja. Egwene hadn't seen women of four different Ajas so much as walk together in the hallways, let alone hold conference together. Not a single one of them was red, and each of the four was a sitter. Siain was the stately woman in white robes and silver trim. A sitter from the white Aja, she had thick black hair and eyebrows, and watery blue eyes that regarded Egwene with an even expression. Beside her was Doasine, a sitter of the yellow Aja. She was slender and tall for a Kyrianan. Her rich, rose-colored dress was embroidered with gold. Her hair was adorned with sapphires, matched by the stone at her forehead. Yukiri was the gray sister sitting beside Doasine. Yukiri was one of the shortest women that Egwene had ever met, but she had a way of regarding others that always made her seem in control, even when accompanied by very tall Aes Sedai. The last woman was Saeran, an Altaran sitter for the brown. Like many browns, she wore unornamented dresses, this one a nondescript tan. Her olive skin was marred by a scar on her left cheek. Egwene knew very little about her. Of all the sisters in the room, she seemed the least shocked to see Egwene. "What have you done?" Siain said to Medani, aghast.
"Adzalan, bring them in here,"
Doasine said, rising and gesturing urgently. "If someone were to walk by and see the Alvir girl there—" Medani cringed before the stern words. Yes, she would require a great deal of work before she had the bearing of an Aes Sedai again. Egwene stepped into the room, moving before the brutish warder could pull her forward. Medani followed, and Adzalan closed the door with a thump. The room was lit by a pair of lamps that didn't give quite enough light, as if to complement the conspiratorial nature of the women's conference. The boxes might as well have been thrones for the way the four sitters occupied them, and so Egwene sat herself on one as well.
"You were not given leave to sit, girl," Saeran said coldly.
"Medani, what is the meaning of this outrage? Your oath was to have prevented this sort of lapse."
"Oath?" Egwene asked. "And which oath would this be?"
"Quiet, girl," Yukiri snapped, slapping Egwene across the back with a switch of air. It was such a faint punishment that Egwene almost laughed.
"I didn't break my oath," Medani said quickly, stepping up beside Egwene. "You ordered me not to tell anyone of these meetings. Well, I have obeyed. I didn't tell her. I showed her."
There was a spark of defiance in the woman. That was good.
Egwene wasn't certain what was going on in the room, but four sitters together presented her with an unequaled opportunity. She'd never thought to get a chance to speak with so many at once. And if these were willing to meet together, then perhaps they were free of the fractures undermining the rest of the tower. Or was their meeting a hint of something more dark? Oaths Egwene didn't know about. Meetings away from the upper corridors. A warder guarding the door. Were these women of four Ajas, or of one? Had she unwittingly bumbled her way into the center of a nest of blacks? Heart beginning to race, Egwene forced herself not to jump to conclusions. If they were black, then she was caught. If they were not, then she had work to do.
"This is very unexpected," calm Siain was saying to Medani. "We'll take extra care with the wording of your future orders, Medani."
Yukiri nodded.
"I didn't think that you'd be so childish as to expose us out of spite. We should have realized that you, like all of us, would have experience pushing and bending oaths to suit your needs."
"Wait," Egwene thought. "That sounds like—"
"Indeed," Yukiri said. "I think that penance will be in order for this infraction. But what are we to do with this girl she brought? She's not sworn on the rod, and so it would be—"
"You gave her a fourth oath, didn't you?" Egwene interrupted.
What under the light were you thinking?
Yukiri glanced at her, and Egwene felt another swish of air.
You were not given leave to speak.
The Amyrlin needs no leave to speak, Egwene said, staring the women down.
What have you done here, Yukiri? You betray all that we are. The oaths are not to be used as tools of division. Has this entire tower gone as insane as Elida?
It's not insanity, Saren said suddenly, butting into the conversation. The Brown shook her head, more commanding than Egwene would have expected for one of her Aja. It was only done out of necessity. This one couldn't be trusted, not after siding with the rebels.
Do not think we're unaware of your own involvement with that group, Egwene Alvear, Yukiri said.
The haughty Grey was barely in control of her anger.
If we have our way, you will not be treated with such coddling as Elida has shown you.
Egwene gestured indifferently. Still me, execute me, or beat me, Yukiri, and the tower will yet be in shambles. The ones you so easily label as rebels are not to blame for that. Secret meetings in the basements, oaths administered without warrant, these are crimes at least equal to that of dividing from Elida.
You should not question us, Cian said in a quieter voice.
She seemed more timid than the others.
Sometimes difficult decisions must be made. We cannot have dark friends among the Aes Sedai, and measures have been taken to search them out. We here each proved to Medani that we are not friends of the Shadow, and so there can be no harm in making her give an oath to us. It was a reasonable action to make certain we are all working for the same goals.
Egwene kept her face calm. Cian had all but admitted to the existence of the Black Aja.
Egwene had never expected to hear that from the mouth of a sitter, particularly in front of so many witnesses.
So these women were using the oath rod to search out black sisters. If you took each sister, removed her oaths, and made her re-swear them, you could ask her if she were black. A desperate method, but, Egwene decided, a legitimate one, considering the times.
I concede that it is a reasonable plan, Egwene said. But swearing this woman to a new oath is unnecessary.
And if the woman is known to have other loyalties? Saren demanded. Just because a woman isn't a dark friend doesn't mean she won't betray us in other ways. And that oath of obedience was probably the reason Medani couldn't flee the tower.
Egwene felt a stab of sympathy for the poor woman. Sent by the Saladar Aes Sedai to return and spy on the tower, discovered by these women, presumably, during their search for the Black, then revealed in her true purpose to Elida. Three different factions, all pushing against her.
It's still inappropriate, Egwene said. But we can set that aside for now. What of Elida herself? Have you determined if she is of the Black? Who gave you this charge? And how did your cabal form?
Bah! Why are we speaking with her? Yukiri demanded, standing up and putting her hands on her hips. We should be deciding what to do with her, not answering her questions.
If I am to help in your work, Egwene said, then I need to be aware of the facts.
You're not here to help, child, Doasine said. The slender Kyrian in yellow's voice was firm. Obviously, Medani brought you to prove that we don't have her completely beneath our thumbs, like a child throwing a tantrum.
What of the others? Cian said. We need to gather them and make certain that their orders are worded better. We wouldn't want one of them to go to the Amyrlin before we know where her loyalties lie.
Others? Egwene thought. Have they sworn all of the spies, then? It made sense. Discover one, and it would be easy to get the names of the others.
Have you found any actual members of the Black, then? Egwene asked.
Who are they?
You are to remain quiet, child, Yukiri said, focusing green eyes on Egwene. One more word, and I shall see you taking penance until you run out of tears to weep.
I doubt you can order me to any more of it than I already have, Yukiri, Egwene said calmly. Unless I am to be in the Mistress of Novices' study all day each day. Besides, if you sent me to her, what would I tell her? That you personally gave me penance? She'd know that I wasn't scheduled to see you today. That might start raising questions.
We could just have Medani order you to penance, said Cian the White.
She won't do such a thing, Egwene said. She accepts my authority as Amarlin.
The other sisters glanced at Medani. Egwene held her breath. Medani managed a nod, though she looked horrified to be defying the others. Egwene released a quiet breath of thanks. Saeirin looked surprised, but curious. Yukiri, still standing with her arms folded, was not so easily dissuaded.
That's meaningless. We'll just order her to send you to penance.
Will you? Egwene said. I thought you told me that the fourth oath was meant to restore unity, to keep her from fleeing to Elida with your secrets. Now you would use that oath like a cudgel, forcing her to become your tool?
That brought silence to the room. This is why an oath of obedience is a terrible idea, Egwene said. No woman should have this much power over another. What you have done to these others is only one step shy of compulsion. I'm still trying to decide if this abomination is in any way justified. The way you treat Medani and the others will likely sway that decision.
Must I repeat myself? Yukiri snapped, turning to the others. Why are we wasting time clucking with this girl like hens left to the range? We need to make a decision.
We're speaking with her because she seems determined to make herself a nuisance, Saeirin said curtly, regarding Egwene. Sit down, Yukiri. I will deal with the child. Egwene met Saeirin's eyes, heart thumping. Yukiri sniffed, then seated herself, finally seeming to remember that she was Aes Sedai as she calmed her expression. This group was under a great deal of pressure. If it became known what they were doing... Egwene kept her eyes on Saeirin. She'd assumed that Yukiri was in charge of the group. She and Saeirin were near in power, and many Browns were docile, but that had been a mistake. It was too easy to prejudge someone based on their Aja. Saeirin leaned forward, speaking firmly. Child, we must have your obedience. We cannot swear you to the oath rod, and I doubt you'd make an oath of obedience anyway. But you cannot continue this charade of being the Amarlin seat. We all know how often you take penance, and we all know what little good it is doing. So let me try something that I assume nobody else has tried with you. Reason.
You may speak your mind, Egwene said.
The Brown sniffed in response. All right. For one thing, you can't be Amarlin. With that fork root, you can barely channel.
Is the Amarlin seat's authority then in her power to channel? Egwene asked. Is she nothing more than a bully? Obeyed because she can force others to do as she demands?
Well, no, Saeirin said.
Then I don't see why my having been given fork root has anything to do with my authority.
You've been demoted to novice.
Only Elida is foolish enough to assume one can remove an Aes Sedai's rank, Egwene said. She should never have been allowed to assume she had that power in the first place.
If she didn't assume it, Saeirin said, then you would be dead, girl.
Egwene met Saren's eyes again. Sometimes I feel it would be better to be dead than to see what Elida has done to the women of this tower.
That brought silence to the room.
I must say, Cian said quietly, your claims are completely irrational. Elida is the Amarlin because she was raised properly by the Hall. Therefore you can't be Amarlin.
Egwene shook her head. She was raised after a shameful and unorthodox removal of Swan Sanche from the seat.
How can you call Elida's position proper in the face of that?
Something occurred to her, a gamble, but it felt right.
Tell me this. Have you interrogated any women who are currently sitters? Have you found any blacks among them?
While Saeirin's eyes remained even, Cian glanced away, troubled. There, Egwene thought.
You have, Egwene said. It makes sense. If I were a member of the Black, I'd try very hard to get one of my fellow dark friends named as a sitter. From there, they can manipulate the tower best. Now tell me this. Were any of these black sitters among those who raised Elida? Did any of them stand to depose Swan?
There was silence.
Answer me, Egwene said.
We found a black among the sitters, Doasine finally said. And, yes, she was one of those who stood to depose Swan Sanche.
Her voice was somber. She'd realized what Egwene was getting at. Swan was deposed by the bare minimum number of sitters required, Egwene said. One of them was black, making her vote invalid. You stilled and deposed your Amyrlin, murdering her warder, and you did it unlawfully.
By the light, Siayne whispered. She's right.
This is pointless, Yukiri said, standing again. If we begin second-guessing, trying to confirm which Amyrlins might have been raised by members of the Black, then we'd have reason to suspect every Amyrlin who ever held the seat.
Oh?
Egwene asked.
And how many of them were raised by a hall filled by only the exact minimum number of currently sitting members? This is only one reason why it was a grave mistake to unseat Swan this way. When I was raised, we made certain that every sitter in the city was aware of what was happening.
False sitters, Yukiri said, pointing. Given their places unlawfully.
Egwene turned toward her, glad they couldn't hear her nervously pounding heart. She had to remain in control. She had to.
You call us false, Yukiri? Which Amyrlin would you rather follow? The one who has been making novices and accepted out of Aes Sedai? Banishing an entire Aja? And causing divisions in the tower more dangerous than any army that ever assaulted it? A woman who was raised partially through the help of the Black Aja? Or would you rather serve the Amyrlin who is trying to undo all of that?
Surely you're not saying that you think we served the Black in raising Elida, Doasine said.
I think we all are serving the interests of the Shadow, Egwene said sharply, so long as we allow ourselves to remain divided.
How do you imagine the Black reacted to the near-secret deposing of an Amyrlin seat, followed by a division among the Aes Sedai?
I would not be surprised to find, after some investigation, that this nameless Black sister you discovered was not the only dark friend among the group who worked to unseat the rightful Amyrlin.
This brought another round of silence to the room.
Saeron settled back and sighed.
We cannot change the past. Enlightening though your arguments are, Egwene Alvear, they are ultimately fruitless.
I agree that we cannot change what has happened, Egwene said, nodding to her. However, we can look to the future. As admirable as I find your work to discover the Black Aja, I am far more encouraged by your willingness to work together to do it. In the current tower, cooperation between the Ajas is rare. I challenge you to take that as your main goal. Bringing unity to the White Tower, whatever the cost.
She stood up, and she half expected a sister to rebuke her, but they almost seemed to have forgotten that they were speaking with a novice and a rebel.
Maidani, Egwene said, you accept me as Amyrlin.
Yes, mother,
the woman said, bowing her head. I charge you, then, to continue your work with these women. They are not our enemies, and they never were. Sending you back as a spy was a mistake, one I wish I'd been able to stop. Now that you are here, however, you can be of use. I regret that you must continue your performance before Elida, but I commend you for your courage in that regard.
I will serve as needed, mother, she said, though she looked sick.
Egwene glanced at the others.
Loyalty is better earned than forced. Do you have the oath rod here?
No. Yukiri said. It's difficult to sneak away. We can only take it on occasion.
A pity, Egwene said. I'd have liked to take the oaths. Regardless, you will promptly take it and release Maidani from the fourth oath.
We'll consider it, Saeron said.
Egwene raised an eyebrow.
As you wish. But know that once the White Tower is whole again, the Hall will learn of this action you have taken. I would like to be able to inform them that you were being careful, rather than seeking unwarranted power. If you need me in the next few days, you may send for me. But kindly find a way to deal with the two Red Sisters who are watching me. I'd rather not use traveling within the tower again, lest I unwittingly reveal too much to those who would be better left ignorant.
She left that statement hanging before walking to the door.
The warder didn't stop her.
though he did watch with those suspicious eyes of his. She wondered whose warder he was. She didn't believe any of the sisters inside the room had warders, though she wasn't certain. Perhaps he belonged to one of the other spies sent from Saladar and had been drafted by Saren and the others. That would explain his disposition. Medani quickly followed Egwene from the room, glancing over her shoulder as if expecting argument or censure to fly out behind her. The warder simply pulled the door shut.
"I can't believe you succeeded," the Grey said. "They should have strung you up by your heels and had you howling."
"They're too wise for that," Egwene said. "They're the only ones in this blasted tower, besides maybe Sylviana, who have anything resembling heads sitting atop their shoulders."
"Sylviana?" Medani asked with surprise. "Doesn't she beat you every day?"
"Several times a day," Egwene said absently. "She's very dutiful, not to mention thoughtful. If we had more like her, the tower wouldn't have gotten to this state in the first place."
Medani regarded Egwene, an odd expression on her face. "You really are the Amyrlin," she finally said.
It was an odd comment. Hadn't she just sworn that she accepted Egwene's authority?
"Come on," Egwene said, hastening her pace. "I need to get back before those Reds grow suspicious."